أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. We were discussing verse number 176, 177. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ليس البر أن تولوا وجوهكم قبل المشرق والمغرب. Piety is not to turn your faces to the east or the west. ولكن البر من آمن بالله واليوم الآخر والملائكة والكتاب والنبيين. Rather, piety is personified by those who have faith in Allah and the last day, the angels, the book, and the prophets. We did discuss this verse up to here, which were somehow ideological aspects of piety. What should we believe in? What should we commit ourselves in our faith to believe in? And then, of course, apart from theological or ideological aspect, the faith has practical aspects as well. Now, the practical aspects are counted here as وَآتَ الْمَالَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّهِ ذَوِ الْقُرْبَىٰ وَالْيَتَامَىٰ وَالْمَسَاكِينَ وَابْنَ السَّبِيلِ وَالسَّائِلِينَ وَفِي الرِّقَابِ. And who give their wealth for the love of Him to relatives, orphans, the needy, the travelers, and the beggar, and for the freeing of slaves. This comes before establishing of prayers, which is another field of duties, which we'll mention later on. Here is giving from one's wealth. It is not zakat, because many of these instances mentioned here are not the cases where they can receive zakat. It is more general than zakat, is more general than khums. It is a sort of social duty or human duty that the believers would have, which would prove their faith. Turning our faces to the east and the west does not prove our faith. These are the things that prove our faith. Now, giving wealth, first of all, ala hubbihi, on its love or on his love. The exegetes here have somehow hesitated. This ha, ala hubbihi, on its love or for the love of it or for the love of him, or despite its love, this ha goes back to whom? Some say it goes back to Allah, that they give money for the love of Allah. It's clear, of course, if you believe in Allah, the last day and everything, and your love increases for Allah, you give money. But the more clearer or something which is more generally accepted is that despite the love for that wealth. And love for the wealth is not should not be confused with someone who is immersed in the material life or has extensive love of wealth. No, someone who needs that wealth, but gives. This is the meaning of love for the wealth. وَآيَةَ الْمَالَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّهِ, despite the love. Now, let's see what the exegetes say here. They say that, first of all, it means while you are still in need of it, and we love wealth because we are in need of it. If we love wealth without being in need of it, of course we are ill. We have some mental problem. We love wealth because we are in need of it. And they say that Ibn Mas'ud and Ibn Abbas, they say that huwa an tu'tiyahu wa anta sahihun ta'mul al-aish. It is when you give while you are still very healthy, you have expectation of long life. You don't think that you are going to die soon, so what am I going to do with all this money? No. Before that, before you lose hope of long life, you have expectation of long life, and then by giving you fear that you cannot replace it later on. You will need it tomorrow. This is the meaning of ala hubbihi. La tumhila hatta idha balagat al-hulqum. Not waiting until the life, the soul comes here to the throat. It means just before the death. Okay, gives this much to my nephew, this give this much to my son, give this much to my daughter. No. Before that, you give this money. This is the meaning of ala hubbihi. Another explanation for ala hubbihi is ala hubbil ita. They love giving, which is of a generous nature. Again, this is a very improbable explanation, because if someone is generous, then is part of generosity, is part of the nature, then there is less commendation for giving than someone who is in need, who doesn't have that sort of natural disposition, but they force themselves to give because of their the duty that their faith would require. Now, to whom give they give? أَتَى الْمَالَ عَلَى حُبِّهِ ذَوِ الْقُرْبَى. ذَوِ الْقُرْبَى are the close relatives. قُرْبَى is close, so ذَوِ الْقُرْبَى are close relatives. And close relatives would include, of course, children, cousins, uncles, aunts, and also a bit farther away, these are called ذَوِ الْقُرْبَى. Or it may mean the ذَوِ الْقُرْبَى of the prophets, which are mentioned in other verses as well, but it's very, it's not very probable. The most probable meaning is to give to their own relatives. Sheikh Tusi says it goes back to the relatives of one's own, relatives, because of the saying of the Prophet who said to Fatima bint Qais, لما قالت يا رسول الله إن لي سبعين مثقالا من ذهب. I have 70 مثقال of gold. فقال اجعليها في قرابتك. Give it to your relatives. Apparently she wanted to give it to the Prophet to be used as public fund, but the Prophet told him give it to your relatives. There's a very interesting hadith by the Prophet, peace be on him, again, when he was asked, what is the best sadaqah that we can give? Again, this sadaqah doesn't mean zakat. It means more general. What's the best sadaqah that we can give? It means, what is the best place of sadaqah to be spent? فَقَالَ جُهُدُ الْمُقِلِّ عَلَى ذِي الْقَرَابَةِ الْكَاشِهِ. This is a very famous hadith. Both Shia and Sunnis have reported this. جهد المقل على ذي القرابة الكاشح. ذي القرابة means relative, of course. مقل means someone who's not very wealthy, but tries to give, tries to save a little bit so that they could give. And كاشح is someone who hides animosity, who hides some sort of grudge against you. A relative who has some sort of grudge is not very friendly. The best place for sadaqah is that relative. Why? Because it has two benefits. The first benefit is you do salatul rahim selflessly. You know that there is some sort of grudge there. Selflessly, you give, you do salatul rahim. The second benefit is that that grudge would go away. So it has two benefits. You actually hit two birds with one stone. جهد المقل على ذي القرابة الكاشح. All these actually indicate that آتى المال على حبه ذو القربة means to their own relatives. واليتامى والمساكين وابن السبيل والسائلين وفي الرقاب. Now these are the, of course, يتامى and مساكين are the weakest strata of society. That there's a general duty of everyone to look after them. Ibn al-Sabil is someone who's not poor, but has been cut off from their resources. This usually doesn't happen nowadays with with bank cards and such things. Of course, no one is cut off from their resources. In old days, sometimes the travelers were traveling, they were attacked by thieves, or they finished their provision, and it was not possible for them to go back and later. Yeah. Yes. Okay. For forgetful Ibn Sabil today, of course. Yes. Yeah. Anyhow, with telephone, with all these things, unless if you forget your telephone as well. In old days, this was a very serious matter. Ibn Sabil was a sort of something that you could come across very frequently. People having lost their provision while they were traveling, they receive zakat, first of all, and of course they should be provided for by the mu'mineen as well. Wasa'ilin, and those who ask you things. Sa'il and miskin are different from each other, or faqir. Faqir and miskin are almost similar, although there are some nuances of meaning. However, sa'il, someone who asks, may not be poor, but may be in a position who wants something from you, or who is who has some need which is not regarded to make him to go on the category of faqir or miskin, but is asking anyhow. So for sa'il, there is also a right, someone who asks. Was-sa'ilin wa-fir-riqab. And fir-riqab, raqaba means usually the slave. For freeing the slaves. Now, freeing the slaves may mean that you are in love of seeing people free. Of course, nowadays we don't have it, although we have modern slavery, which is a different matter. But in old days, when there was this matter of slavery, you would see the attitude of the Quran is always to free the slaves. Why there was slavery and the Quran and the Bible, neither the Torah nor the Injil, why they did not ban it as something quite reprehensible? Because it was a functional thing. It has a function. The function was that because the wars were so numerous and so widespread, if people didn't want to take captives in war, they would have killed everyone. And by killing them, they would have left a disaster in their own tribes, in other tribes. So they were, by taking these people as captives and as slaves, they would have tempted not to kill so many. And also, when there was war, the captives were taken in. They could have put them in prison and provide for them, which would have ruined the whole life. Or they could have accepted them as second-class citizens in their own society. This was the idea of slavery, which was common everywhere. It was a mutual consent agreement, an international agreement, that what should be done with the captives of war. It is very different from modern slavery, I mean the slavery that we had in 19th and 18th century, and that was slavery not due to wars and battles, but going to other continents, rounding up people and taking them to your own country so that they work for you, they become slaves. This is absolutely, of course, haram in Islam, in any religion. That was the function of it. However, you would see that the function is actually somehow taken into consideration, but the whole attitude is to free these people who come and are accepted as second-class citizens, and then you should gradually take them as the first-class citizen. You commit a sin, you free a slave. It means that one person who was a second-class citizen would become a first-class citizen. You want to do something very good, or you have a a need, you ask Allah, Ya Allah, if you give my, for example, you fulfill my need, I free a slave. Or you are recommended to free slaves, to give money and free slaves, buy and set them free. This is another sort of value which is set there. And there was one other thing for slaves at that time. Because now slavery in this sense is somehow removed from international agreements of war, we don't have slavery anymore. We cannot say, like Daesh nowadays, they go and take slaves. It's not correct. We cannot say now if Muslims, for example, have a war, they can take slaves. It's not possible anymore because there is no such an international agreement. It was an international agreement. However, as I said, the rulings of Islam and also in other scriptures was that these people, first of all, should be treated very humanely, should be treated as equal in humanity, in spirituality with others, and they have to be gradually freed, gradually set free. One other way, which is a case of zakat, and also it may be one meaning of this wafir raqab for freeing slaves, was a sort of contract which was made between a slave and their masters. And it was very common, and it was a very good thing. And that was mukatabah. It's mentioned in Surah Nur, وَالَّذِينَ يَبْتَغُونَ الْكِتَابَ مِمَّا مَلَكَتْ أَيْدِيكُمْ. Those who want a mukataba, kitab, that's an agreement. Those who want to sign an agreement with you, the slaves who want to sign an agreement with you, you do sign an agreement. And the agreement was that, for example, what is my price? Okay, your price is 1,000 pounds. Okay, you set me free, I will go and work, and I pay you by installments. Every year, for example, I pay you 100 pounds. Now, this agreement was made. And the good thing about it, which encouraged both the owners and the slaves to venture into this agreement, was that if the slave later on could not afford, if for example his business didn't go well, because the slaves made this contract with the expectation that they are going to set up a business and they are going to earn money and pay back their price. If it didn't work, then it was compulsory on the state to pay from zakat to set that slave free. And also, let alone the slave, the state, individuals here, if you want to prove your faith, what proves your faith is that if you see such a case, that there wasn't a slave who had made such a contract and couldn't do good in business and pay back the price, then you pay for him, or just initially you free a slave. This is another. So, وَآتَ الْمَالَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّهِ ذَوِ الْقُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْمَسَاكِينَ وَابْنِ السَّبِيلِ وَالسَّائِلِينَ وَفِي الرِّقَابِ. These are the instances of financial proof of your faith. That's financially you prove that you are faithful, then there are instances of more obligations. Worship, wa aqama salat, wa ata zakat, and establishes prayer and pays zakat. This paying zakat shows very clearly that those previous instances were not included in zakat. These are outside the obligatory duties of the believers that they have to give all these things. Then, of course, after, you see, establishment of salat and paying zakat comes after those ideological commitments, faith, and those humane and social duties that you take on yourselves, and then establishing salat and wa'at al-zakat, wal-mufuna bi'ahdihim idha ahadu. And those who fulfill a pledge when they make a pledge. Any agreement they make, any covenant they make, they will fulfill it. And this is a general thing between Muslim and Muslim, Muslim and Kafir, Muslim and atheist, whatever. Any pledge which is made by a Muslim should be honored. And this is very clear in Surah Tawbah, for example, when there is a general declaration of war against all those who broke their pledge, their peace agreement with the Prophet. The Surah Bara'ah mentions that there is no more peace agreement. You are all have broken your peace agreement. There, after that very universal declaration of war, it mentions, إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آهَدْتُمْ عِنْدَ الْمَسْجِدِ الْحَرَامِ, except those with whom you made a pledge, either in Masjid al-Haram or elsewhere, and they kept their pledge. فَأَتِمُّوا أَهْدَهُمْ إِلَى مُدَّتِهِمْ, as until the time that you have made the pledge, you have to keep your, of course, honor that agreement that you have made. It is not only a religious concept, it is a human concept that people should keep their promises and their pledges. And especially this is very important in international matters nowadays. And mufuna ba'dahum, maybe of course in family, in community, in our own society, the more important expression of this is of course in international relations. And this is what we see nowadays, and since all days of course. As soon as one party in international community finds some more power, they break their pledge. I don't want to mention Donald Trump nowadays, the agreement they have with Iran and all this they want to break. So it is a human understanding that pledges should be honored, and of course it is mentioned as one instance of how your faith could be proven by keeping your pledge. وَالْمُوفُونَ بَعْدِهِمْ إِذَا أَحَدُوا وَالصَّابِرِينَ, of course, patience is a great element of faith, as we have in hadith. Patience with regards to faith is like head to the body. If the head goes, body dies. If patience goes, of course, faith dies and goes away. And this sabr and patience should be wasabirina fil ba'sa'i wadharra'i wahina al-ba's. Different instances of difficulties and troubles are mentioned, and Allah says that a true believer should have patience in this. Ba'sa means bu'us, al-bu'us wal-faqr, poverty. To be destitute and to be patient, which is a very important thing. There is one very important hadith in Nahjul Balagha by Imam Ali alayhi salam, which says that the world and the faith, ad-deen wa dunya, are based on a few things. One of them is that rich people who do not refrain from giving, and poor people who are patient and do not sell their akhirah for dunya. And then he says, if the rich people refrain from giving, then poor people lose patience and they sell their akhirah for dunya. Why? Because they have to steal, they have to lie, they have to embezzle, all these things. So if the rich people do not give, their money goes from other avenues, stealing, embezzlement, and such things. Anyhow, one is patience in al-ba'sa. The other is patience in al-dharra. Dharra is as-suqm wal-waja. Disease, pain, health problems. And we have in about Prophet Ayyub alayhi salam, Rabbi inni massaniya dhur wa anta arhamur rahimin. When his wealth went away, he didn't complain. And all those calamities, his children went, but the disease was somehow killing him. Not killing in the literal sense. It was so difficult for him to bear, which he eventually said, Rabbi inni massaniya dhur. This disease is not tolerable for me. Of course, I have patience, but I complain to you only, not to anyone else. And there came his relief and salvation. So, sabirina fil ba'sa, poverty, if we are poor, we have to be patient. We shouldn't lose faith. We shouldn't lose our bearings so that we try to get money from unlawful sources. Wal wadharra, and when they are unhealthy, wahin al ba's, and in the battle. So three things which are the most difficult in life. One, fil dharra, fil ba'sa. The second was fil dharra. Wahin al ba's is usually in jihad, in the battlefield. As Sheikh Tabrasi says, yurido waqt al qital wa jihad al adu. The time when people are in the battlefield, they shouldn't lose patience, they shouldn't go back, they shouldn't withdraw. There's one hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, which is very interesting, about the Prophet. Usually we do not expect the commander or the Prophet to go forward for battle. What we expect is that he would sit somewhere to somehow direct his troops. روي عن علي عليه السلام أنه قال كنا إذا مر البأس اتقينا برسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم فلم يكن أحد منا أقرب إلى العدو منه. When the battle became so difficult, مر البأس means that here بأس again is used, which is the term used here in this one. When it became so heated that no one could actually bear in that heat of battle to stay, we somehow sought refuge to the Prophet, who was fighting in the forefront, and there was no one closer to us to the enemy. This is, of course, if Prophet advises, or if he preaches others to be patient in battlefield, he was the one who was more patient and more braver than everyone else. Now, after mentioning all these, first of all, those ideological commitments that people should have. Secondly, financially, they have to be very generous. Thirdly, in terms of worship. Fourthly, they have to be patient in difficulties. Then it says, أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا. These are the ones who are truthful in what they claim as being a faithful person. Well, that means we are not faithful, isn't it? It means that we have a degree of faithfulness. But if we really want to be faithful, all these should come together. We have this hadith of Junudul Aql wal Jahl, the troops of Aql, and the truth of jahl, ignorance. And after Imam alayhi salam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam mentions all these different qualities, 70 qualities which are the troops of intellect, and 70 qualities which are the troops of ignorance, then he says, not all these qualities can come together in one person, except if he is a prophet, or was he of a prophet, or a mu'minun imtahana Allah qalbahu lil iman, a person who has been tried and tested severely by Allah and proved himself as a believer. This combination only comes through in them. Other believers, they have some of them. They have 3, 4, 5 until they complete. Hatta yastakmel. They have to try to actually complete these qualities. It's the same here. We may not have all these qualities, but we have, if we want really claim and somehow criticize others in their faith. This is, This is the example of it, isn't it? The Jews were criticizing Muslims that you pray once this direction, once that direction. And Allah says, you know what is faith? You criticize that because they are not praying in one direction all the time. You think that faith is to face east or west? No, this is the faith. So now tell me which one of you is faithful. This is, of course, the highest standards. And as I said, this verse is very important because this sets the standard of a faithful person as an ideal that we have to reach. Not something that, of course, we have now. It's an ideal that we have to reach. That is why Sheikh Tusi and Tabrasi, they say that استدل أصحابنا بهذه الآية. Our Ashab, this means the Shia scholars, have argued with the help of this ayah, أَلَا أَنَّ الْمَعْنَّ مَعْنِي بِهَا أَمِيرُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ. This verse is about Imam Ali. Why? Because there is no disagreement between Ummah that he had all these qualities. وَلَا تَجْتَمُوا فِي غَيْرِهِ قَطْعًا. Not all these qualities can be found altogether in another person. He says, قَطْعًا. Certainly, these qualities cannot be found in any other person, and there is no disagreement among the Ummah that all these qualities were combined in Imam Ali alayhi salam, فَهُوَ مُرَاد بِالْآيَةِ بِالْإِجْمَاءِ. It is the ijma of the Ummah. While we don't have such ijma on other people. Yes, of course, the Sunnis may say these come through on such and such people, but Shias do not agree. The Shias may say these come through on such and such people, but Sunnis may not agree, isn't it? But in Imam Ali alayhi salam, it is ijma of the Ummah that all these had come true. فَهُوَ مُرَادٌ بِالْآيَةِ بِالْإِجْمَاءِ وَغَيْرُهُ مَشْكُوكٌ فِيهِ. Okay, about others we may say, but there is doubt from different quarters. وَقَالَ الزَّجَّاجُ وَالْفَرَّاءُ. These are, of course, great early exegetes. هَذِهِ الْآيَةِ تَتَنَاوَلُ الْأَنْبِيَاءَ الْمَعْصُومِينَ. Say, this only can, of course, include the Anbiya and the Infallibles. Anyhow, there's no doubt Anbiya and Infallibles have these qualities, but with regards to our Ummah, the Ijma is about Imam Ali alayhi salam. At the end, this is أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُتَّقُونَ. Now, at the beginning, it says لَيْسَ الْبِرْ أَن تُوَلُّ وَلَكِنَّ الْبِرْ مَنْ آمَنَ بِاللَّهِ. Goodness can be found in these people. This is a high sort of, this is the excellence of taqwa, first of all. If you want to know what is the excellence of taqwa, this is the excellence of taqwa. And others have also said that, of course, muttaqun, certainly they are muttaqun. It means they are ittaqaw nara jahannam. These are the people who are kept away from fire of hell. What about others who don't have all these qualities? They are kept away by shafa'a, not by these qualities, of course. These qualities, if they can be found in someone, they are kept away from fire of hell. Others, they are kept away by shafa'a, by mercy of Allah, and such things. Okay, inshallah, we continue the next ayah, which is about qisas, in our next session. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ala tahirin.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. So in summary, what I've understood is that we have faith and we may have patience, but yet we can complain to Allah.
Complaining to Allah is always good, provided we don't complain to anyone else other than Allah. When Ya'qub was criticized by his sons, why you all the time grieve over Yusuf, he said, إِنَّمَا أَشْكُ وَحُزْنِي إِلَى اللَّهِ بَثِّ وَحُزْنِي إِلَى اللَّهِ. It's only Allah that I'm just complaining, no one else. It's good. يَا مَوْضَعَ كُلِّ شَكْوَى. You are the one that to whom should complaints should go.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Any brothers or sisters wants to open up the debate? Any sisters? Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
My apologies for interrupting you, because I have actually experienced this Wabnu Sabil, and I couldn't resist it.
So what did you do then?
We shall talk in private. and people, I've had the opportunity to help people. In rare cases, it does happen. Anyway, that's not important. The thing I want to ask you, there is an ayah, I think, further on, where the which says, if I'm not mistaken, لَنْ تَنَالُ الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُ مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. I think it's the
it's
beginning of...
Imran,
yeah. Huh? In the next ayah. The word bir is also used there, and the word bir is used here.
Yes.
And I just want you to know, what is that
it's
connection?
It's the same thing. Bir is goodness. Goodness, this is the definition of goodness. And also, you cannot achieve that excellence in goodness except you give away... أَتَى الْمَالَ عَلَى حُبِّهِ, isn't it? This is one of them. So that's one instance of it.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Any sisters? No? Can you pass the mic to Sarfraz?
Sheikh, As-salamu alaykum. You were talking about slavery, and one of the points you made was they didn't keep people in prison because it wasn't good for them. But another point is these societies were just above subsistence. They couldn't afford to keep people in prison and feed them and look after them. They just couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's another point, of course.
So they had no choice. Either they returned them and they would come back and kill them. They couldn't imprison them because they didn't have the money.
Yes.
What else? The captivity was the only other option they had.
Yeah, yeah. Or their relatives could come and pay some ransom and free them. It's a very important point. There was no other viable option. And even in our modern society, I mean, if there's no exchange of prisoners, if they want to keep prisoners, captives or in prison, it's very unfair, isn't it? I mean, you keep people for 20 years, 30 years. This I actually saw with regards to the war between Iran and Iraq. These young people were actually kept in prison for more than 20 years. Some of them more than 20 years were kept in prison for no fault. I mean, going and fighting for one's country is not a crime, isn't it? For no crime, you are kept in prison, and this is not fair. Therefore, I think that was a good solution. When the point of slavery or the concept of slavery comes, you always think about 19th century slavery. When
that was a business.
It was a business. People were just living in their villages, in their cities. They were rounded up and brought and sold and without any rights with that sort of despicable situation. We think about that, but if we think about it carefully, we see that it was a solution for this matter issue of war captives. Yeah.
Thank you. Any sisters? Brother? Feroz? Yeah?
Alaykum as-salam.
Sorry, I just arrived a bit late, and maybe you have already answered this, so my apologies. You know, the sequence of this ayah is a bit interesting. It talks about ideology, and then it talks about salat, and then it talks about some other qualities. I'm intrigued of how this sequence is going. I mean, normally there are ayahs that talks about amalu ibad and amalu salih. You pray and you do good deeds. So action and
faith
yeah.
and amal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in here, this is more. It's something different. It's not just action. What I'm trying to understand is why is it in that sequence? Is there a hikmah behind it? I'm just intrigued. That's all.
No, it's the same order because first comes faith. وَلَكِنَّ الْبِرَّ مَنْ آمَنَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. It's just a more detailed explanation of faith. And a more detailed explanation of amal al-salih. So it's just الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمَلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ Iman and amal al-salih. Iman is mentioned in those five things. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala yawm al-akhir wal-malaika wal-kitab wal-nabiyin. Then amal al-salih is explained in those detailed description. Yeah, the same thing.
Thank you. Any sisters? Brothers?
a point of clarification. If I remember correctly, there's another ayah that talks about ma anfaktum, and then is the zilkurwa wal yatam wal masakin is mentioned in somewhere else. You know, when the I think
it's zakat, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and exactly. And at that time, if I remember correctly, you mentioned that the two interpretations. One is a sequence, i.e., the references for Zilkuba, then Yatama, then Masakin, then Wabnu Sabil, or it could be that these are the four categories. Yeah. So the same applies here too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, here, because it's voluntary, because zakat is mentioned later on. Those instances are voluntary givings, so there is no order.
Categories are the same.
Yes, categories are the same. Yes.
In that sense, that was for zakat. In this sense, it's for general income.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. Any sisters, brothers?
Thank you very much. So this ayah is not specifically for Muslims. I mean, it is just generally human standards of your obedience and your actions. That's what Allah is emphasizing. I know the slavery of the type that you described then does not exist. But really, if you look at the difference between then and now, when an individual or a family are subservient either to the landlord, for example, because they haven't been able to pay the rent in time, or to the employer from whom they have taken huge loans, or huge debts relating to credit card, whatever. I mean, it is almost akin to slavery. And so my point is that once it's very emotionally appealing, and of course it should never be neglected that you try and help a Syrian orphan or a Yemeni house that has been demolished or a school in India, whatever. In our neighborhood, individuals, human beings in huge debt is something that I feel that it is our immediate duty, it is our duty in our land, just like it emphasizes on kinfolk. So your relatives whom you know the most, try and relieve that first. Similarly, where you live geographically, irrespective of the people of faith around you who are in problems like debt, I think it is our obligation as well.
Yeah, it's very interesting you mentioned this about those who live around us, because we have another verse in Surah Nisa. وَعْبُدُ اللَّهِ وَلَا تُشْرَكُوا بِهِ شَيْئًا وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا وَذِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْمَسَاكِينِ وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْمَسَاكِينِ وَابْنِ السَّبِيلِ وَالْجَارِ ذِي الْقُرْبَى. Neighbors who are close to you, either in terms of relative or in terms of place, they are just quite living next door, for example. It doesn't say whether they should be Muslim or non-Muslims. وَالْجَارِ ذِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْجَارِ الْجُنُوبِ. Now, junub means someone who's far away. A neighbor who is either not your relative, far away may mean that, or a neighbor who lives farther away, as the Prophet says, until 40 houses is your neighbor. Not only that, it's very interesting. وَالصَّاحِبْ بِالْجَنْبِ. Anyone with whom you come in company at any time. You sit in the train, in the bus, or in the plane beside someone. That creates a right between you two. Or, for example, you go to a meeting and you sit with some people. That creates a right. If we really want to think about it, the obligations that we have is so huge. That is why they say, from prayer to prayer, when you pray one prayer until the next prayer, and you pray these two, whatever is between these two is forgiven for you. We think that it means sins. Because, for example, if you commit a sin between the two salat, it's forgiven. It's not about sins. It's about all these rights that people have upon us, and we are either negligent or ignorant of them, and we do not fulfill it. So it's very difficult. I mean, the right of human beings on each other is very, very, very important.
Thank you. Any sisters?
Thank you very much for it. Just if you have a limited fund for charity or zakat or whatever it is, and if you have a conflict between your neighbors who is in needy and the Muslim guy who is in needy, so what your, I mean, according to, it's a quite a question, because many times the situation arises where you have to decide whom to give. So our duty comes to help the Muslim, they are in equal needs, but at the same time you're...
You know, some people have multiple rights on us. For example, neighbor has a right. Even neighbor, if a neighbor is a relative, it's two double rights, isn't
it? Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
If is a relative, a neighbor, and a Muslim...
And a different faith, neighbor of a different faith and somebody of a Muslim faith.
I say that.
Yeah.
Then that Muslim has three sort of rights on you rather than two. So you have to prioritize. You see whose right is... has priority over you. And sometimes the situations are different. For example, there's someone who is in dire need, someone who is in need but can cope. So we have to prioritize. And the only thing is that we, shaitan always, always comes forward and say, wait a moment, what about yourself? What about your children? What about others? This attitude of generosity should gradually develop in us. وَأُحْذَرَتَ الْأَنفُسُ الشُّهُ. People have, by disposition, this sort of refrain from giving out of fear. It should go away. And it goes away by practice, if we have. And even if you don't have, it's not only about rich people, even poor people. جُهْدُ الْمُقَلْ. Someone who's not very well-to-do, but they try to give. Gradually, this generosity will come. And of course, Allah has guaranteed that He would replace. So, if we want any other guarantor except Allah, the only thing is that He doesn't replace immediately. Because if He replaces immediately, then everyone will give. No. It takes some time. It comes in different forms that we do not realize. And therefore, people are tested for their faith.
Thank you. Brothers? I think Riaz is? Safraz?
Sheikh, based on what you said, somebody mentioned something to me from a member, on the member, and I'm not sure if it's hadith or just wisdom, but he said that whenever you give something from your pocket in the name of Allah, and if later you became poor or something happened, it would never be because of that money.
Yes.
So you should never think that, oh my, I need something, or
it's true,
because if you do, it'll never be because of that. Maybe something else, but that one is never the reason.
That's true. That goes with all those narrations.
Is that hadith or is it just wisdom?
Well, even the ayah of the Quran, وَمَا تُنْفِقُوا مِنْ خَيْرٍ مِنْ شَيْءٍ يُخْلِفُهُ اللَّهُ. Allah will replace it. This is a promise of Allah, and therefore, yeah, it's exactly what you say. It's according to the verses of the Quran.
Thank you. Any sisters? Brothers? Sister?
Yep. You mentioned about the slavery, that there is a scheme where when the slave does not able to pay, the state have a responsibility to pay it. Is it equivalent to same as Qarz-e Hasana, like you borrow money for somebody and then you, if you can't return it, the condition is you are supposed to return it. But if they can't return it,
yeah,
you are supposed to forgive.
One of the instances of qualification for zakat is al-gharamin, those who are in debt. So if someone, without, of course, squandering the money, I mean, I have borrowed from a business, the business has gone bankrupt or didn't work, then, yes, zakat should be paid to fulfill it, yeah.
Thank you. Any brothers? Sheikh Ogarias, you
are? Assalamu Sheikh. Just a comparison. We talked about two things that actually apply in society now. And I'm just looking at it and I'm thinking, this is not what it was meant for. For example, you just said that somebody who is in debt and is bailed out by a Muslim brother, that's a very good thing. Well, a few years ago in this country, the banks were bankrupt and the government bailed out the banks, thereby doing a good thing because there were some people who were suffering, they couldn't pay their mortgages. Mm-hmm. Now, I know we're talking about riba here and things like that, but this is what we're looking at. So, the state helps out the people who can't pay. So, in a way, it's slavery to the money, isn't it? They are slaves to the money because they are owing money to the bank.
Well, you can call someone who is in debt a slave, but this is a sort of metaphorical usage of the term, isn't it? I mean, not everyone who is in debt is a slave. A slave has a very determined and categorical definition. Someone who is owned by someone else and cannot own anything. I mean, legally, that was the case. But we can, of course, metaphorically use the term for other things. But it wouldn't have legal implications, isn't it? Because these terms have legal implications. If you are a slave, you cannot own anything. You cannot do anything without the permission of your master. And you are regarded as a second-class citizen. All these things which follow. But we can, yes, we can say, for example, Imam Ali said, لا تكن عبد غيرك وقد خلقك الله حرا. Do not be a slave of anyone else while Allah has created you free. It means a slave in other terms. It doesn't mean legal slave. It means you should not, for example, just follow someone blindfoldedly or because someone has money, you just try to appease them. Or this is of course, a wider sense of slavery.
Thank you. Any sisters? Sheikh, within the context of what we have learned today, is that if you can throw some more light on two occasions where we find Imam Ali giving a ring in Sajda and Hasnain and Bi Fatima Imam Ali fasting. So the people who came, were they under the category of miskin, sahel, or what category would you put them under?
Well, that's exactly the phrase which is used there is وَيُطْئِمُونَ الطَّعَامَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّهِ مِسْكِينًا وَيَتِيمًا وَأَسِيرًا. They feed these three people despite loving. Now, again, that zamir could go to Allah, that pronoun, or it goes loving that food because they are in need of that food. Not love to be infatuated with something, because they were in dire need of that food. Despite that, well, it goes with under the category of وَآتَ الْمَالَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّهِ ذَوَى الْغُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْمَسَاكِينَ وَابْنِ السَّبِيلِ. It goes under that category. Yeah
but these are the three categories, but okay, they're miskin and
Yatim and Asif. These are the three categories mentioned there. Okay.
Yes. So, is there any particular one that applies to, or all three?
Yeah, they gave to all three. Yeah. Maybe I'm not understanding your question. Sorry. Can you explain more?
Okay. When Imam Ali gave the ring
to the poor
person, under what category did he come? Miskin or?
It was just a miskin because miskin. He came and asked. He was sa'il and he was miskin.
Okay.
He was sa'il, he was someone who asked for, and also he was a poor person, and that's why he asked.
Because the fakir are also different from miskin.
They say, they are not sure. Sometimes they say fakir is worse than miskin. Sometimes they say miskin is worse than fakir. But apparently both of them have the same meaning.
I see. Okay, thank you. Any brother? Yeah.
Sheikh, this point of Asir, I don't understand. I mean, Asir is a prisoner.
Captain.
So how would you come across a prisoner? I mean, he's in prison. And if he's not in prison, then he's a runaway.
Asir, you can think of those people who were captured in war, and then they were just roaming around, not yet being sort of allocated to one place or one person. So we had these people at that time, that they were just not knowing what to do. They were not provided for yet because they didn't have any master yet. Because they were not a slave, but they were asir, not yet enslaved by a particular person.
And they wouldn't be miskin. I mean, that would be a definition of miskin, wouldn't it?
Well, miskin, they are miskin because they were captive. So the category of captive is better for them than miskin. Yeah.
Thank you. Any brothers, sisters? Anybody? No? Thank you. Muhammad Wali, Muhammad Salwat. Next Sunday, inshallah.
I will not be available for next 3 weeks. I'm traveling, inshallah, so inshallah after that.